It is Thursday, November 22nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, President Donald Trump begins his Thanksgiving holiday by renewing his quarrel with Chief Justice John Roberts about the role of the judiciary. A representative of a humanitarian organization describes the suffering in Yemen.
We're getting some terrible decisions from the Ninth Circuit, as usual. I don't know if we've ever had a victory in the Ninth Circuit. We have to appeal it. Yes, a vast number of...
And singer Ariana Grande overcomes some personal struggles to release a new hit single. It's all ahead. U.S. President Donald Trump started his Thanksgiving holiday by renewing his public debate over the independence of the country's judicial system. In a teleconference Thursday with American troops overseas, Trump said a federal appeals court in California has become a big thorn on our side. The president's remarks came one day after he and Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts engaged in an extraordinary debate over the independence of the federal judiciary, with Roberts berating Trump for criticizing a judge who ruled against his administration as an Obama judge. Roberts responded with a rare public rebuke of the president, saying Trump's comments reflect his misunderstanding of the judiciary's role. "We do not have Obama judges or Trump judges, Bush judges or Clinton judges," Roberts said in a bluntly worded statement. He said what we have is an extraordinary group of dedicated judges doing their level best to do equal right to those appearing before them. That independent judiciary is something we should all be thankful for. But Trump rejected the rebuke and launched new criticism.
"We're getting some terrible decisions from the Ninth Circuit, as usual. I don't know if we've ever had a victory in the Ninth Circuit. We have to appeal it. Yes, a vast number of their decisions get overturned, generally speaking. And it's a shame. It's a disgrace, frankly. And essentially, they're legislating. They're saying what to do. Some judge sitting in some location very far away is telling our incredible military and law enforcement what to do, and it's not right. And it's been going on like that for a long time. And we are doing really well, considering the laws are a disaster. And if we had the right laws, it would be a lot less expensive and would do it a lot easier."
The U.S. Constitution established the federal judiciary as a co-equal branch of government with the executive and legislative branches as part of a system of checks and balances on power. Presidents nominate federal judges, and then the Senate confirms them. Robert Dietz is professor of governmental affairs at George Mason University. International Edition's Lori London asked him for his reaction to this issue.
"Chief justices generally don't make this kind of commentary on political issues. At the same time, presidents don't make the kinds of statements about federal judges or any other kind of judge, for that matter, as a matter of course. And so I think what Chief Justice Roberts was doing was kind of firing a shot across the bow. I'm not going to allow my branch of government to come under foolish political attacks from the executive branch of government. And believe me, I'm here for life. You're not. And it probably would behoove you to demonstrate a little respect for the third branch of government."
After the Chief Justice made the statement, Trump basically went back after the justice and said, "Sorry, Chief Justice, but you do indeed have Obama judges."
"Justices, federal judges, state court judges, judges of any merit are not, is political animals. I have never heard of a justice or a judge, when faced with a case, say, now let's see, what would the president want me to do, since he appointed me, you know, he's a Democrat or a Republican. What would he want me to do? I cannot truly imagine that thought process go through a justice's mind, even one who tends to be quite political.
Right.
I can't imagine that even being a part of the inquiry.
It seems that every time a ruling doesn't go in his administration's favor, he just goes on the attack of whoever is responsible, whatever judge or justice that may be.
Yes.
In fact, Roberts himself, back when President Obama was in 2012 in particular, when the Supreme Court preserved President Obama's signature domestic policy, of course, the Affordable Care Act, Trump tweeted, "Congratulations, John Roberts, for making a Americans hate the Supreme Court.
Right.
That's unreal, but he wasn't president then.
Right. It's really, I think all of us who care about, you know, democracy, care about this country, ought to be concerned that a president seems to work so hard to undermine the faith that the country invests in its three branches of government. Because it's really almost an accusation of corruption. I don't mean corruption in the sense of money passing hands, but I mean the notion that anybody, and particularly a president, thinks that judicial cases are decided because of the personal predilections of justices, or that they would do something because the president who appointed them wants that thing to be done, is such a wrong interpretation of how our system of government works.
We have heard the president in recent days go on the attack against a very high-profile senior military member who's
yes.
responsible for the capture and killing of Osama bin Laden. We
and
have
enormously well-respected by, you know, across the board.
Right. And someone pointed out we've heard the president go after his Central Intelligence
yep.
Agency. We've heard the president go after high-ranking military members. We've now heard him, you know, going on the defense with the Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. And yet we haven't heard him really say anything negative to Saudi Arabia,
right.
who is potentially responsible for the murder of a U.S.-based journalist.
No, absolutely. But, you know, I can't help thinking that at some point, even his most loyal supporters aren't at some point going to say, wait a minute, this is nuts. This man is just babbling, that he doesn't know what he's talking about, he speaks from ignorance, and that this is not the kind of person we ought to be entrusting our democratic values with, is absolutely an idiot. He doesn't understand how government works. He doesn't understand sort of proper democratic values.
The president a while back made a statement that he was very upset that he wasn't able to have a say or input into the inner workings of the Justice Department and the FBI. Does that sort of give you a signal that he doesn't understand the fundamental
yes, absolutely.
Of our Constitution and
yes.
how our justice system works?
Yes, and I believe that is actually true. Part of what makes our government strong is our institutional system with three branches of government. And for him to act as though the Department of Justice, you know, this magnificent institution, is his own private law firm to do his bidding as though he were, you know, back in the private sector and he would say to a lawyer, look, I want you to sue somebody. The lawyer would say, oh, yeah, sure, you're paying my bills, no problem. And the fact that he seems to feel that way, I mean, really believe it, such a misguided understanding of how our government system works, has to be almost breathtaking.
Robert Dietz, professor of governmental affairs at George Mason University. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. Pakistan and India agree to open a new border entry for Sikh pilgrims. President Donald Trump threatens to shut the Mexico border if migrants cannot be controlled. The Nissan board fires jail chairman Carlos Ghosn following an internal probe. And British Prime Minister Theresa May announces an agreement with Europe on Brexit. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A group of scientists say they have found a large array of ancient but still inhabited termite mounds in northeastern Brazil. Writing in a recent study, the researchers say there are about 200 million of these cone-shaped and evenly spaced piles of soil that cover an area equivalent to the size of Great Britain. The collection of these 2.5 meters high by 9 meters wide mounds is so vast that you can actually see them by using Google Earth. The researchers found evidence that the termite mounds are about 4,000 years old and that they are the result of continuous labor by generations of the occupying termite species excavating a vast network of interconnected underground tunnels. One of the study authors says that the amount of soil excavated by the termites is equivalent to 4,000 Great Pyramids of Giza. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, a U.S. man is killed by arrows on North Sentinel Island in the Indian Ocean. We'll have a report. United Nations envoy Martin Griffiths is in war-torn Yemen to prepare for peace talks after fresh fighting erupted in the key port of Hodeida. Griffiths was scheduled to meet with Iran-aligned Houthi officials in the Yemeni capital of Sana'a in an attempt to persuade them and the Saudi-backed Yemeni government to begin negotiations in Sweden by year's end. Both sides recently expressed support for Griffiths' efforts, but the eruption of violence after a lull raised the possibility talks could be derailed. The port is under rebel control and is a lifeline for food, fuel, and humanitarian aid to the suffering population. The Saudis have accused Iran of sending arms to the rebels through the port, a charge it denies. The Trump administration has joined its Western allies in demanding a ceasefire in Yemen. Saudi-led airstrikes aimed at driving out the Houthis have killed thousands of people and wiped out entire civilian neighborhoods, including hospitals. The fighting has compounded the misery in Yemen, which is also dealing with mass starvation and a cholera outbreak. The war has created the world's largest humanitarian crisis. The international aid group Save the Children said in a report this week about 85,000 children may have died of starvation and disease since March 2015. Sukaina Sharafuddin is a communications officer with Save the Children in Sana'a. She tells me about its latest report on child starvation.
It just proves how bad is the situation in Yemen. We gave it numbers, and these numbers behind it is faces and families and children who should have a bright future and live like ordinary children around the world, but rather are having their lives taken away by completely preventable causes such as, you know, hunger and diseases that the world has stopped hearing about, like cholera and diphtheria. And it's completely unfair just because they're living in Yemen. And now starting on our fourth year and the situation never got better. It just deteriorates by the day, and the children are the victims of this. Just imagining that you are in the 2018 and we are about to start the new year of 2019, and rather Yemen is facing it from every angle. Children in here, rather than going to school, they have struggles from every angle, whether it is the airstrikes falling off the sky or on-ground conflict, and then starvation because simply their parents cannot provide. Food is available everywhere. So you see it in the markets, you see food is everywhere available, but it is just that their parents don't have the money to buy it. And the reason behind that is the drastic increase on prices. And their families even have jobs or fixed income to provide. So this is what makes it more difficult and sad. You know, as a mother, I have a 2-year-old, and as a Yemeni as well, I'm just lucky that I have a job and I can provide for my son. Because if I didn't, I don't know what I could have done. We are really don't know what to do, and that we feel that the world is neglecting us a bit.
I was not aware of that. I thought that a lot of the starvation was because of, you know, because of the war, but apparently it's also just because of the prices.
Yes, so it's a part of it is because of the war, of course, and then the other part, the war is in its fourth year right now, and like I said, it keeps deteriorating by the day. And the devaluation of the Yemeni rial and the restrictions on the Hodeida port has caused the economy to collapse. You know, Yemen depends 90% on commercial imports. That means we depend on food from the Hodeida port, aid from Hodeida port, and just medical supplies even from Hodeida port. So having these restrictions have caused the prices to increase either double or triple their prices. And the families, and because of the conflict, many have lost their jobs. Teachers are not being paid regularly. Medical workers are not being paid. Some haven't been paid for even 2 years. So they cannot even have a salary to buy these goods, although available in the markets because of their prices. So yeah, food is actually available.
What would you like the international community to do to try to help the situation in Yemen and the children there?
There must be an immediate stop to this war. I mean, Yemen is already the world's worst humanitarian crisis. It's the world's worst place in the planet for a child to be in. There must be an immediate pressure on all conflicting parties to come to the round table. We're hoping on the peace talks to succeed, and we're insisting that this must succeed because otherwise Yemen will just fade away, and it's impossible to imagine that 78% of the entire population are in vital need of humanitarian assistance. It's all preventable. This is not a crisis, a natural disaster, you know. It's a crisis made by men.
Is there anything else you would like to say?
So again, behind these pictures, the world is starting to see and focusing about Yemen, you know, those starving children. Just please put a name to every face and imagine you seeing them or relate to them, because these are lives that are being taken away. I met a mother who has 4 children. And when I asked her, what are you hoping for? What are you thinking? She said, my hope in the past 2 years was for the war to stop. But my hope right now is for an airstrike or something happens to kill us all, rather than seeing my children starve to death slowly. It just kills me by the day, and I don't know what to do for them. So it is really that bad. And yeah, 85,000 is a very big number.
Sukaina Sharafuddin, a communications officer with Save the Children in Sana'a, Yemen. Indian authorities said Thursday it could be days before the body of an American can be recovered from remote 60-square-kilometer North Sentinel Island in the Indian Ocean Andaman Archipelago, which is Indian territory. 26-year-old John Allen Chow of Washington State was killed Saturday in a hail of arrows after stepping ashore on the island. Indian police is said off-limits to outsiders. The island is home to dozens of Sentinelese described as a pre-Neolithic tribe. Chow, an outdoors enthusiast from West Washington State, is a Christian and appeared intent on sharing his faith with the inhabitants of the island. Jonah Blank is a South Asian expert and anthropologist with the RAND Corporation, currently based in Jakarta. He tells International Edition's Victor Beatty, whatever his motivation, Chow's venture was illegal and dangerous.
Any contact with a remote tribe in India is illegal. It is banned for the very good reason that contacting people who are really Neolithic communities is incredibly dangerous to them in both cultural and physical terms. In cultural terms, an uncontacted people almost always find that their civilization is wiped out culturally within a very short time of being exposed to other societies. Perhaps more importantly, at least from a universal standpoint, almost every Neolithic community that is contacted by outsiders is exposed to diseases that very often wipe them out. We've seen this in Brazil. We've seen this in islands throughout the Pacific. Just things as ordinary as measles and flu can ravage communities that have no immunity to these diseases.
Apparently, he was trying to share his Christian faith, but Indian authorities are calling it an ill-advised venture.
And they're right. They're absolutely right. I, as an anthropologist, I can say that one of the cardinal rules observed by all ethical anthropologists and missionaries is not to contact uncontacted people. Any responsible evangelist knows this, because whether or not they believe that they are winning souls, they are certainly putting their prospective flock at grave risk of disease, even if you set aside cultural elements. This individual would have done a much, much better job if he had turned his evangelical attentions to the billions of people in the Western world or throughout the developed world who now profess no religious belief and might well have been more amenable to his advances.
Do you anticipate anybody will be accused of the crime?
I think it's unlikely, because the action that he was taking was illegal under Indian law and should be. The people who are presumed to have killed him were defending their own territory. They didn't know that the grave danger that he posed to them, because they had no way of knowing that they had no immunity to the diseases to which he was immune and carried in his own body, as we all do. But without knowing it, they were, in my view, committing justifiable homicide in self-defense.
South Asian expert Jonah Black. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This is International Edition. One of the most popular female singers has just released a very successful new single from a hit album. VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joins me with the latest.
Well, today we've got the brand new song from Ariana Grande, which is off of her Sweetener album. It's called Thank You, Next. A lot of people believe that the song is the result of the failed relationship she recently had with Pete Davidson, who's a comedian actor from Saturday Night Live on NBC television here in the United States. But she won't confirm or deny that report. But the song is so good that it's gone to number one, and it's been number one for 2 weeks. The fastest number one debut since 2015 when Adele was number one. There are only six female singers who have debuted at number one. And so Ariana Grande is in elite company. So let's check out the new song. It's called Thank You, Next.
I think I read somewhere on the internet that maybe she had tweeted about she'd had some hard times recently.
Well, yeah. I mean, the whole world is aware of the hard times she's had. First of all, she performed in Manchester last May, a year plus, and people lost their lives because after her concert at the Manchester Arena, a suicide bomber blew himself up and took a number of lives, injured a number of other folks. That was devastating to her. She went into depression. She still suffers anxiety and loses a lot of sleep over that. It's something that affected her deeply. Then, this past year, her boyfriend, ex-boyfriend at the time, Mac Miller, took his own life. So she had those things to deal with while putting out a brand new album called Sweetener, and recently got engaged, all within a month of dating Pete Davidson. And then it ended, all within 2 months. So it didn't really last. Probably wasn't meant to last from the beginning. Problem is, when you're young like Ariana is, you get a tattoo with your future husband's name. And what do you do after it ends? You know, that's what she's been dealing with. She covered it up with a Band-Aid once. She then had something written over the tattoo she had gotten. Another way she's dealing with her anxiety and depression, she cut her hair, which is kind of interesting for Ariana because she's famous for having a ponytail,
right,
which she's had for a number of years since she appeared on a children's show on Nickelodeon TV. So she's cut her hair. It's short, no more ponytail. But she's going out on tour. This album is doing very well. She's had quite a few, God is a Woman, No Tears Left to Cry, Breathe, and these are songs she's already had hits with. Now the latest at number one, Thank You, Next, is out. And so she's going on the road with Normani Corday, formerly of Fifth Harmony, so it's going to be a great tour. Ariana is definitely one of the artists to watch right now. She's very, very popular in the mainstream and currently on the charts doing well with her new album, Sweetener.
Well, it seems because of that and her new tour, she's got a lot to feel good about.
She does. Well, hopefully she's feeling good enough to hold it all together and keep the proper perspective. There are people close to her that say that she's not been herself lately, so you know, she's got a lot of support. She loves her fans. And hopefully, you keep reading today where people like Demi Lovato, Selena Gomez, these stars in the mainstream are dealing with the pressures of being famous. And hopefully Ariana keeps it together, keeps focused, you know, on the future and how bright things are looking for her in the future.
Thanks a lot, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings. And that is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks for joining us. Have a very happy Thanksgiving.